in association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. This past weekend was the Baltimore Comic Con. Thanks to everyone who came up and said hi. It was great meeting everyone and seeing old friends as well, and talking to a lot of great comic creators. And in the next couple episodes of Word Balloon, we'll feature conversations from the Baltimore Con. First up, Brian Bendis. We're going to talk exclusively about The Siege, the new Marvel event that Bendis is behind that begins in December with a one-shot and then continues in 2010, ultimately reuniting Cap, Iron Man, and Thor. We'll also bring you portions of the Powers panel, where Bendis and Mike Oeming answered questions about the 10 years of Powers and gave you some hints on what's coming up beginning in November with a new number one from Powers, the Powers Encyclopedia, the third Powers hardback that's coming out, and also information on the plans to make Powers into a TV show at the FX network. All coming up on this episode of Word Balloon.
The good news is I have a good microphone because poor Brian Bendis is just like scratchy, and but very kind to spend a moment with me live at the Baltimore Comic Con, and it's always fun talking on the phone, but now we take a moment live.
Yes, well, we are right outside the men's room at Baltimore Con. You know, I wanted to do it in the men's room, but John was chew chicken, so.
We didn't want to scare anybody. I didn't think any drug deal or anything like that was going on. So not only is Brian in Baltimore for the Comic-Con, but also as we're recording this, we're a day away from the Retailer Summit that happens in Baltimore. Big announcements are coming for Brian. It's already been teased. We've seen a cover and a little bit of an interview with Brett Butler, a tease about The Siege, where finally Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor will be reunited. At least that's the idea.
Well, it's Siege is a 4-issue miniseries, starts in January, written by me, drawn by Olivier Coppiel, and it is two things at once. It's the big finale to The Dark Reign, and at the same time, it's going to unveil what we think is a very big, giant new chapter in the Marvel Universe that will answer the question, what is a big enough threat to get these characters of Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America, who have not only been opposed to each other, but literally haven't been on the same side in way before I came on Avengers. It's been almost a decade for them to be together. So it's really going to be, I think, a special event to see them together, fighting something that is worth getting back together over.
And again, going back to that cover, and now that we kind of understand what's coming, I go back to that cover where we saw the Iron Patriot fighting Dr. Doom, Taskmaster was there, Loki was there.
Well, that's the Siege Cabal one-shot special that's coming out in December by me and Michael Lark and Mel Hollingsworth. And for those who read the Cabal special, the first one that came out after Secret Invasion, and said, wow, that's not going to last. Well, yeah, you were right, and here it is. The Cabal falls apart under the weight of the massive egos and dilemmas of the members of the Cabal. So not only is that going to happen, but you're going to find out what Norman's secret weapon was against Doom.
So the voice that he's been talking to, that we've kind of seen him kind of...
Yes.
Okay, I see. Now, this is, as you say, a 4-issue thing. I was wondering, with the markup now to $3.99, I'm sure that affects the prices of trades. And I was wondering if that was going to affect at all the pacing of an arc in terms of, going from 6 issues, then maybe you guys would start doing more 4-issue arcs or 5-issue arcs, something like that. I don't know.
Actually, I'm going to take credit for this. This one was my idea. I said... If Siege, like, I wasn't sure if Siege was going to be in, hold on a second. While we're talking, I'm watching this guy get his Astro Boy head being put on in the men's room. There's literally, I can see into the men's room, and a guy's Astro Boy head is being adjusted. That is something you don't see every day. Anyway, sorry. I was watching.
That's good. That's
I was hypnotized by this guy. I actually want to talk to him more than I want to talk to me. What are we talking about?
4 issues.
Oh, 4 issues. Oh, yeah. You know what? I heard when people were talking about Secret Invasion and some other miniseries from the other companies and stuff, and they were griping about how long it was, and I heard it. I understood it. I mean, there's not a page of Secret Invasion that I thought was wasted. It had, that's how long that story had to be. But I said, if we do this again, if you guys are going to go like its own miniseries, I definitely want to... I want to craft it in a way that we can get it done quicker and less tie-ins. And I'm, you know, basically your voices were heard. And thankfully, the story dictated that I could do it. So, and it was a challenge to me, too. Can you get it done? So, well, let's go talk to Astro Boy.
Will the events of the siege, I asked Matt this earlier, Fraction, who's, of course, working on Iron Man, how much will this play on, you know, the individual books of Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man?
Here's what I promise, and for those who feel that they're immune to hype, every time we've said something like this, it's happened. After House of M, the Marvel Universe was changed, and it never went back. After Civil War, after Secret Invasion, these things were massive changes. What's going to happen after Siege is the biggest change to the Avengers universe, to the Avengers titles, to the Avengers publishing, to the Avengers teams, and all the titles that has happened since like disassembled. It's a massive change. And what I like about it is a giant change that you usually see around the time a book is failing. But we're doing it when we don't have to, which makes it all that more and more exciting. It's going to be a massive, massive change. In fact, right after this, I'm going off to New York City, and we're going to have a big Avengers powwow with me and Ed Brubaker and Matt Fraction, and Chris S. Gage is going to be there, and we're going to get into it. And really make sure. I don't think slots. Yeah, slot. Slot.
Well, you know.
Slot is home, holding on to the Spider-Man villains and going, "Don't touch my toys." No, I. It's Christos right now. He's writing the book, so I don't know. Maybe Dan will show up. I don't know.
Okay.
You know, New York guys always seem to end up at the retreat. They always seem to weasel their way in. You know, they always seem to find out where we are, you know, so.
So when you say change, too, then obviously with the Cabal breaking up, the shelf life of Dark Avengers might be coming to a close. You know, I mean, will the same titles be?
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying I'm not saying Dark Avengers is canceled or New Avengers, but I'm saying that the aftermath of Siege completely alters the tone and reason for every book that Marvel publishes in that arena. So I think it's a very exciting change. I think it's a change for the better on every conceivable level. So we'll see what people think.
So yeah, so we'll obviously see new team members as well, and a new grouping. Well, that's
and Clint Barton dies in the second and third issue. We kill him twice. Yeah,
you can't kill him enough. That's okay, man. Well, and that's, you know, and it's I think some critics of the direction that you've taken Avengers in that I have heard say that they miss the world-level cataclysms. Now, granted, Secret Invasion was a world-level cataclysm. Civil War was a Marvel World cataclysm that I think was worthy of the Avengers' attention. But, yeah, I mean, and again, I don't want you to spoil, but, yeah, I mean...
What's funny is, you know, I've seen that criticism that you write on my board all the time, and I point out, I go, well, the collective, like every other storyline was an adventure story of Ultron. These are massive stories. And everyone goes, oh, yeah. See, what you don't get in my books, it used to get in the old days, is having Captain America turn to the reader and go, this is a cataclysmic event the world has never seen before. You got to have to think about it for a second and decide for yourself. And, yeah, you never really saw the Avengers fight ninjas.
Well,
that was
Maybe more specifically, Spider-Man being involved with the Avengers and that it didn't feel like a typical Avengers story. Personally, I embraced the change, much like the ads that you guys had. But no, really, honestly.
You're a Skrull.
And also, yeah, I guess I am part Skrull on the Greek side. But also, no, I also like the idea, too, that you go back to, you know, when Stan changed things and put Wanda and the Quicksilver Hawkeye into the Avengers with Cap. The Avengers needs to be different. It doesn't always have to be that same group. And also, there's such a huge body of work. Kurt Busiek, name all the different great writers that have touched the Avengers throughout the years that you can go back to and stuff. And I felt it was fun seeing a different group of Avengers. So I appreciated what you said, too, that, and I don't know if it was one of my old interviews because I was going through some of them, and you had said maybe that it would have been a better idea before you had done Disassembled to do a couple of classic tales, not regretting, and I'm kind of carrying the question here because I know you're coughing, but yeah, not regretting what you've done in terms of Disassembled and how you set up the new teams, but just show that, yeah, you could tell a traditional Avengers story with the old group if you wanted to. And
yeah, and then what I said was I saw the point of that here comes this guy who just goes, you know, if you're a fan of the Avengers, and you, it's like you're going to someone's playground and you kick over their sandcastle or you knock over the toys. And that, it's, there's no difference between that and what someone does when they join a book and blow it up. And I was... So I looked at it back and I go, yeah, maybe I should have done one or two stories, but at the same time, it's issue 500. If you're going to blow something up for issue 500, you know. So
it's a big holy shit moment.
I understood that the criticism of my earlier work on the book was because people were going, hey, who the hell are you? And, you know, now that I've stayed with it, I see people like dissemble more. Because they're looking at it retroactively, going, oh, he does like the Avengers. Oh, he is going to stick with it. And there are other guys, you know, like my buddy Mark Millar, who he's a hit-and-run artist. He does a book, he hits it, and he runs. And that's what he wants. That's what he says. I'm not criticizing. That's what he likes to do. He wants to write Daredevil Born Again of every book he's on. And I'm more like the guy, like Gil Kane. I want to be in a book for a while. You know what I mean? And hit all the different flavors of it. So, and there's pluses and minuses to both things. You know, I'm a big fan of that weird fucking issue of Daredevil just before Bullseye killed Elektra. It was just the greatest issue of Daredevil. The issue before it, Daredevil's underground with an underground kingpin in the sewers. It was the weirdest issue. So I like that. I like that, like, you don't know when the weirdest issue is going to be or that, you know. So the point is that, yeah, the Avengers have so many different flavors available to it. And I think that every teammate certainly can anchor a story with a certain tone. And it doesn't always have to be Captain America's point of view or Tony's point of view. All these different flavors can be addressed as like the major flavor of a story arc. And that's one of the things in my head as I'm writing them. So,
I see what you're saying. Also, and I've loved watching you play with Bucky as Cap with the new Avengers. And I think that's been a lot of fun. I know that obviously Steve is, you know, coming back. And I know December will have the one shot that Ed is doing where... I guess the decision will be made in terms of, you know, who wears the mantle and stuff and what is done with a world where Steve Rogers and Bucky Barnes still exist. I don't know. We don't know until that story.
I know.
Yeah, I know you.
Oh, I know. Okay.
So, I mean, are you able to say, is it Steve? Is it, or Tony?
What are you crazy? Ed Brubaker will wind me to death. I'll tell you what the months are that are big. December and January are very, very big months. You know, you got Siege the Cabal, you got the Who Will Wear the Shield, Siege number one. I'm hucking into the microphone. So there's a lot going on in that time period. A lot of upheaval. I think it's going to be very exciting for people. You don't know where the surprises are going to come from.
All right. I know. You're dying, so... I'll wrap up, but say, as always, honestly, hey, man, thanks. You're a good friend.
For listeners of the Word Balloon Bendis tapes, we have to finish one up. We're going to finish it very, very soon. Oh, absolutely, we're going to finish it. Absolutely. So I thank you for your patience. Me and John have not been on the same schedule this summer, but our intentions are strong, and John's an awesome dude, and listen, John's been running around this convention like a maniac, getting interviews from everybody, working like a real reporter, so I hope you guys enjoy the tapes he's got coming off this convention. So let me ask you, John, who was the biggest dick you met at the show?
You know, no one's been a dick, and actually one that I at least was nice to me this time. I was surprised. Dare I say the name? Chris Claremont? I just did. And yeah, he was actually very... Well, he's been a little gruff with me in the past, but he was very nice this week.
Tell them who you had dinner with.
I did. You know, and I had to rub it in Brian's face because he loves the guy so much. Walter Simonson had a great dinner, had great Manhunter stories. And I actually have to tell you, and it's been nice to see, and I wanted you to comment on this. I'm glad you bring it up. Walter told a story because I know you said that one of the reasons why you're so good to fans is that through the example of you meeting Walt as a kid, and Walt actually told that story independently of me, of anyone mentioning your name, and he said that it was at like an Ithaca, was it, I don't even remember what said it. It was in Cleveland? Okay. But he said as a kid that, you know, you approached him and that meant a lot to you, and you've since expressed that to him. He went back and said he was reading Thor at, you know, just from the spinner rack and didn't get a specific issue and wrote to Marvel just as a fan, as a kid. He had missed like 122. and got a manila envelope in the mail with the issue and a blue card attached that was printed out and, you know, just a line for his name. And it was signed, printed, Stan and the Gang. But then there was a written note at the bottom saying, Walt, you seem like a really good fan. We didn't want to let you down. I hope you enjoy this issue of Thor. Sincerely, Stan and the Gang. He said it blew his mind. It is the reason why he became a comic book creator. He said that is why. And then he said he approached Flo Steinberg when he was working at Marvel, or at some point, because maybe Flo had already been away from the company, but showed her the card. He kept the card and still has it. And she looked at the writing and she said, yeah, that's my handwriting. And yeah, so that was cool. And then he in turn said, you know, brought you up.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing, man, and I think that's really cool, and I think that is what we learn, especially at these conventions, is that you guys really do pay it forward, and that it really does go back to the birth of comic fandom, because Walter is really, you know, only a couple years behind Len Wein and Marv Wolfman and Paul Levitz. And that was the really fun thing, especially about this dinner with Walter, was to hear about all the old-timers and how cool they were. And also, as the sea changes with, you know, DC and Marvel and stuff, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but it's been great that the caretakers of the companies have always been guys that have been very good to the fans. And regardless, he was very certain that, no, that'll still continue. And I know...
I think it will, too.
Yeah, I think, you know...
I got to tell you, that is the biggest fun part of a show like this for us, is that, you know, literally yesterday... I wasn't even set up yet, and Walt Simonson comes over and goes, hey, let me show you my new pages. And there's these cool pages he did with John Pollione.
Wasn't it great to learn, too, that his use of blacks was something that inspired him and how he's going to do it, and that he is still growing as an artist and sees what you guys do, and it's like, ooh, I'm going to try and incorporate that in my stuff.
It's been 20 years now, and every day I say I want to be Walt Simonson when I grow up, because he now is an elder statesman. He's the coolest guy. He's so cool. And he shows me these manga pages he did for Manhunter, and you're like, he's trying new stuff, and he's sitting out and resting on his laurels, and then 2 minutes later George Perez comes up and hugs me, and I'm like,
that's awesome.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I can't believe you even know my name. You know, it blows my mind. So it's unbelievable. So I'm gonna go sign.
All right.
I feel guilty now that I'm not signing.
No,
so
yeah, I understand. No, get back.
All right, we're Balloon People. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, we'll maybe over the holidays, because that usually kind of is conducive for us to kind of find some time and do business. But yeah, we'll get back to the questions. And as always, a pleasure seeing you, my friend.
All right, brother.
Our Baltimore coverage now switches over to the Powers panel, where I had the pleasure of moderating between Brian Bendis and Mike Avon Oeming, and we discussed 10 years of Powers. Now I'm going to give you the bulk of the panel, but unfortunately, the sound system at Baltimore was really the only negative experience at the con. They had 2 cubes set up on the convention floor with no real enclosure, so you could hear all the elements of people milling around. The sound system was really bad, and there are a couple little spots where you might hear a little bit of static. Now, with an equalizer, I've been able to minimize that, and I'm providing you with the bulk of the panel, but then near the end, during the Q&A session, the feedback just got too intolerable, so I had to back out. But still, you get a lot of information, not only in the history of Powers, but what's coming up, and I think you'll enjoy this presentation.
All right, let's start. Everybody having a good time at the show so far? Fantastic. Thanks for coming. It is a day of 10th anniversaries. Of course, Baltimore is celebrating its 10th anniversary for the con, and we're here for the 10th anniversary of Powers. I'm John Suntress. I do a podcast called Word Balloon, and... And the guys were very kind to suggest that I moderate the panel, which was very cool. And you know these two gentlemen, the co-creators of Powers, Brian Michael Bendis, Michael Avon Oeming, ladies and gentlemen.
And are we recording this for a Word Balloon?
We are recording this,
you
Lucas.
You are now part of the Word Balloon universe.
Yes, this is a...
Word Balloon Bendis Takes Annex.
Yes, exactly. Added content. There we go.
So
I'm going to Twitter everything.
That rude, that's me.
So, well, first, let me state the obvious that, and I'm very curious about the genesis of Powers, because it came at an interesting time, 1999, and what was the impetus to start Powers?
1999, when Love Is Free.
When a band called Jesus Jones was celebrating its 5th anniversary,
yes,
of notoriety.
MTV played videos, and... Well, its genesis was actually a couple years before that. Mike Oeming, myself, and David Mack were traveling the country as a barnacle of
gypsy
comic creators trying to build an audience. And, you know, I had just finished Torso, and I was working on The Fortune of Glory, and Mike was working on Ship of Fools.
Yes, that was it.
Ship of Fools, and David was working on Kabuki, and we had all met at a Philadelphia comic book signing at a store that no longer exists called Claude's Comics. And me and David were already friends, so we met Mike, and Mike was this Tasmanian devil of art styles and ideas and porn comics and all these things that he was doing. And after the convention, Mike was developing his style that would become his power style. And he had faxed me over a version of Jinx, my character Jinx, in this style. And he did one of Kabuki. And he sent it over to us at the same time. And I called David Mack and I go, gee, I'd rather Jinx was drawn like this than the way I'm drawing it. And he goes, yeah, I think I might hire him to do a Kabuki arc or something. And I'm like, wait, hold on. And and so I called Mike. We weren't friends yet, but I called him up and I said, listen, I have this, you son of a bitch. I have this idea for, of course, asking the questions that I ever have here. And I told him that I had this idea for Powers, and I wasn't sure if we should go sell it to DC or sell it to Marvel, or do it on our own. And the idea to do it on our own seemed insane, because crazy, because
there are legitimate Powers images.
I don't remember taking that picture. That was a weird night.
We're seeing a bunch of Photoshop images that Mike is projecting for the live audience, for our listeners.
Yeah, see, I have a message board that abuses me on a regular basis, and Mike has now taken it upon himself to do a best of situation.
Wow, look at 10 years ago. Wow.
Yeah, that's great.
Sorry, man.
So anyway, I said let's do it as a creator-owned series, and we were both scared because neither one of us had ever sold enough books to generate a color book. You know, both Jinx and Torso and Ship of Fools. I don't think any of them sold over 3,000.
No, fuck no.
Yeah, and we needed at least 12,000.
Diamond would not carry our books at this point,
okay,
because we wouldn't have sold enough to exist. So if we were to start today with our numbers on Jinx and Ship of Fools and stuff, we would not be able to be published.
Yes. So we made a pinky pact and said, we'll try it in color because we have this idea for it to be in color. Like, Jesus Christ. All right, there's me with hair. Now you know why I got rid of it.
I like 12-year-old Bendis. I like that.
That sadly was not 12-year-old Bendis. That was probably 20s Bendis. Anyway, so we went for it, and our first issue came in at 12,000. Like, it was right on the bubble.
Wow.
To be successful. It was the most we'd ever sold in our lives. And, but in the history of comics, second issues, I'm not having any luck. I'm fighting myself here. So, but anyway, we ended up going up in sales from second to third to fourth. Up until issue 12, we kept rising in sales, which is never, it never happens in comics. So, we tapped like three times last 10 years.
And then the monkey issue came out, and we were nearly...
Well, there were big things that happened before the monkey issue. Was Warren Ellis made an early appearance in Powers? Was it issue 7?
7, yeah.
Okay, so it was after that first Who Killed Retro Girl arc.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, Warren was cool. I had come up with the idea to have an obnoxious British writer on a cop ride-along. I had done a lot of ride-alongs in doing research for Powers and other stuff, and I always found the dynamic of a writer sitting in a cop's car very odd, and I thought, wouldn't it be hilarious if there was this dickhead who wouldn't shut up about himself? And then the same night, I read one of Warren Ellis's columns at CBR, and I really didn't know Warren. I said, hey, Warren, I have this idea for an asshole-ish British writer to go to write on. Can it be you? And he went, yeah. And I go, can I use all your columns for dialogue? And he went, yeah.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And he was totally cool about it, and he laughed about the whole thing.
That's very
funny. Very, very cool of him.
What I like about Powers, and I'm sure all of you will agree,
it's interesting because it's an exploration of superheroes in a way that we hadn't seen before, and I think the book continues to do that, but it's also an exploration of celebrity. And not only traditional celebrity that we've seen in the book, but also embracing a lot of the new media. And Mike, I wonder from a design standpoint, how is it incorporating some of the ideas of, you know, I mean, you guys go from, like, there are pages where it's internet chat, there are pages, you know, you do mock-ups of magazine and tabloid covers.
Yeah.
I know in either the ninth or in the second to last or most recent trade, there were the trading cards of them. So yeah, it's superheroes as celebrity. And from a drawing standpoint, what's that like?
Well, actually, this is where the strength of the Powers team as a whole comes together. A lot of times on those pages where it's very technical and you got like multiple screens of internet stuff, I'm not going to draw that because it's way easier and more legitimate to reproduce in like Illustrator or something. And that's where our colorist, Nick Villardi, and our former colorist, Pete Pantazes, will come in and really, really design the page.
Oh.
Out of, sometimes I would just give them elements, and they'll just be like handwritten thing in here, like internet page. And then Tim Daniel, who's one of our other guys that helps out with a lot of stuff, will write articles that go onto the website, the fake web page, which then later goes onto the actual Powers website. So it's another example of how the Powers team comes together as a whole. There's a lot of people that support what we're doing. And that's the biggest challenge there is there's a great trust with other creators that are working.
Okay.
But,
well, what about the design of the characters? I mean, we've got, you know, obviously, especially for the first two volumes of Powers, the focus is on the cops, Christian Walker.
Hold on, you know, what's not fair is that there's plenty of pictures of Mike Oeming online.
No, they're not.
Bendis Borders will remember the Let's Make Fun of Oeming thread that had
wonderful
pictures.
Go to the Bendis Board tonight, and I will have a dedicated thread of pictures of Mike Oeming from his Bon Jovi Jersey days. All right. And there's plenty of material.
I clearly remember the conversation about let's have some AV stuff, and you're like, no. And I was like, do you mind if I do it? And you're like, yeah, go ahead. I don't care.
Big 80s hair. Big. But before you start, some of the art you guys are looking at, I know some of you guys are looking at it going, I don't remember seeing any of that. A lot of this artwork is from the brand new volume of Powers that starts November 27th. So, yeah, thank you.
We're all excited.
Yeah, so, and what you can see here is this is a look back at Walker's days during World War II and after World War II when he was part of what became the superhero Rat Pack. So you're seeing a lot of, it's a untold tale of what Walker was doing just before his superhero glory days.
Well, and Walker's journey as a hero is obviously one of the big, you know, running storylines in the book, and we saw him, of course, we mentioned the ape sex book, yeah. Of course, but yeah, I mean, we literally saw him at the dawn of time and kind of his Conan phase. The era that I liked was him as the Blue Streak in the 30s kind of look, and I always am curious about what the inspiration for some of the costumes are, and in the case of the Blue Streak, I mean, it looked to me like some old Union kind of posters and stuff like that. I don't know where you were coming
from.
Yeah,
you know, I think Brian had sent me some JPEGs of just what you were thinking about. They're like, the overalls were definitely in the script, I remember that.
Yeah, I'm a giant fan of the pulp heroes.
Yeah, I love the Marvel's doing the timely stuff right now. It's really cool.
Yeah, and
but in the case of the Blue Streak, it looked more like a steel worker rather than, you know, like a traditional pulp hero, for example.
Well, a lot of the pulp heroes had a look of, I'm a guy and here's my mask.
Yeah.
That's true. And like the Goon.
And I kind of went with that and he took it right.
Well, I think you had described him as a Polish immigrant. And so there was like that middle European look and, you know, the steel workers and you know, the early industrial age kind of stuff. But it was just a dock worker, so I was imagining a lot of that playing into it.
Yeah.
So this is Walker during the World War II that we just saw, right?
The end of World War II and the early 50s up to the 60s, yeah.
Okay. And that, again, going back to this exploration of celebrity and pop culture, I think has been fun to see in Powers. And it's something you've embraced not only in the modern age, but, you know, I would imagine, much like we've seen tabloid magazines with some of the arcs, going back to the 50s, we might see some of the earlier tabloids, like Confidential and that kind of look. I mean, will we see tropes of celebrity coverage?
Yeah, you know, it was... I pre-reality television, I was son of a bitch, completely obsessed with what I perceived to be a media-saturated culture that I and what we would do to superheroes if they were with us. And just the concept was it's VH1 Behind the Music. That's what it would be. It would be, we wouldn't see superheroes all the time, but we would talk about them all the time. We would talk, there would be a TMZ on each channel dedicated just to superheroes. And we would not let them be, and we would not let them live, and we would not let them be heroes. And we'd be constant. And I thought, what a great, starting at the dead body is a great way to peel the characters off. And, so that was basically it. Little did I know that so much of what in the first couple of years of Powers was perceived as like over-the-top satire was just
real life.
Now Letterman's got a secret bed, there's not a celebrity who's immune to,
Yeah, and I think, and as you say, I think the way that celebrity is covered in the media has evolved in the 10 years that you guys have been doing Powers, and so I think there are things that are going on even now that we haven't seen yet, and I would imagine there are still things to explore.
Well, I look back and I see that, we have a lot of, like, superheroes die on camera, and I can't help but think that we're going to see a celebrity die, like, on film.
Other than the Walenda on the high wire? I remember him falling.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Or that helicopter scene from
I believe
Twilight
it.
Zone, right?
I'm out of here.
Well, I missed it. Should I go back?
Oh, man. Now, there's times like this. Well, I see we do have a video camera, so maybe there will be a video.
Thank God for recording this.
God. Yeah, really, I think you need a running narrative of some of these
I'd like to announce Powers is canceled. Thank you, Paul, for being here, Paul.
Right, that's not even you.
In the last trade, we saw the introduction of, and is it Inky? Is it Inky Sunrise?
What?
How do you pronounce
it? I swear to God I had a dream just like this and it didn't end well.
How do you pronounce Walker's new partner's name? Is it Inky Sunrise?
It's Inky Sunshine. Inky Sunrise. Named after Inky Bilal, one of my favorite cartoonists.
Oh, that's interesting because I thought it was kind of a play on typical kind of comic book names. And you've got, like, Christian Walker, who's on his hero's journey, and you've got Inky Sunrise, which kind of is kind of, like, it sounds like a Doibie Dickles kind of, Golden Age almost name or whatever. Dina,
you don't have to be talking now. Let the slides play.
There you go. Should we all just enjoy the slide fest? Exactly.
I'll stop it at some point.
Dina, and obviously I know, seeing you at cons and stuff, Dina's always been such a favorite character for people to get sketches from you.
Yeah.
And Dina's character. Is everyone caught up with the series? Is there any new readers to Powers?
We gave you a year to catch up, so.
Yeah, I mean, really. Check out the trade. So there, it's much like a television series where you see a character change at the end of volume 2. One of the characters of Powers goes away, and it's Dina. And I won't go into the details. Those of you who read obviously know. Was this always part of the plan, or is this something that kind of evolved?
Yeah, it's about 80% part of the plan. I always try to leave the stories open to let the characters dictate their involvement in the story. I think it's very important. Especially in comics, it doesn't happen a lot where the stories are so set with a three-act structure, and that's fine and dandy, and a lot of great comics are made that way, but I like when the characters kind of take over. Either they surprise you by falling in love or surprise you by going, no, I'm not going to do this, or,
We didn't have Walker's past planned out like that. You called me one day, and you were like, I'm ready to do something really crazy. You ready to do something really crazy? I was like, all right. And then you sent me the script without much explanation, and I was like, I can't wait. I can't wait to see where this goes or what this is about.
And that was the start of Volume 2, that the forever? Or?
I think it was the middle of Volume 2.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can't just lock yourself into, this is what I'm going to do, and no matter what I think, I'm not going to change. You come up with a good idea, stop. But as far as the overarch of the story, and Trip Hammer coming back when he did, and Dina having that, that was all planned.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we've also seen kind of the evolution of Walker's mortal enemy, Bloodfist.
Yeah.
Tell me about Bloodfist. I mean, there's an interesting character that...
You know, Walker, it was pretty much his only enemy that we kind of created in the series. Walker's enemy has always been the world around him and his environment, from sort of the psychological stuff he's up against and the choices he has to make. But for the Forever story, we came up with this character, which we tapped back into an earlier story arc and said this character, the Wolf, has been around in Walker's life since the beginning, and it's a story of the two of them. And I suspect, well, even though he's gone, we're going to see more of him in these flashback stories, and his presence is pretty strong. And I think that's still going to be part of the future of Powers.
Will Dina still be part of the future of Powers? Because there's a very popular character. And again, I made the comparison to television series, and a lot of times it's an actor, you know, kind of parts with the producer.
I thought about this a lot, and I think about even today with my tune in MASH, and it's not a Frank Burns episode. I go, and some of them are, I wish this was a Frank Burns episode. So, yeah, she's coming back.
Okay.
Yeah. She will be coming back in a new way. And she'll be coming back sooner than you think, but not right away, and it's going to be a surprise when and where, except for the solicitation of the catalog. Well.
Yeah. I know the Powers Encyclopedia is coming up, and did you have to do a lot of new art for the encyclopedia?
Yeah, it's all new art. We didn't use any like stolen shots from the comics. Maybe one we did.
Now, why didn't we, by the way?
What's that?
Why didn't we? We should have just...
Because I need the art to sell afterwards. You know?
There you go.
Plus, it was a lot of fun. It was great fun to take the whole world and kind of have it laid out. And both Brian and I, as we're looking, just like, holy crap, we've got a lot of characters and there's all these stories to pick up on. I think we added 3 more years of life to the series just in looking at these other characters and story arcs that we wanted to continue with, and all these seeds that were planted that we kind of forgot about. And we're like, oh, this is just like, this is fresh ground again to plant seeds in and explore new stories. So it was pretty awesome.
That's cool. And I would imagine like the Marvel handbook of the universe and stuff, now people can really, like, if they wanted to role play Powers, there's certainly enough characters that, you know, you could have.
Yeah, and again, that's also where one of our other invisible teammates comes in, Tim Daniel.
Okay.
Tim Daniel wrote everything. He knows his story.
Great job.
Yeah, so basically he went through the books, wrote out an entire list of every single character, down to individual cops who only had one or two lines.
Okay.
Wrote every single character out, and then wrote bios for them. You know, Brian, of course, had to approve it and stuff like that, and then I had to draw all these characters. I couldn't find a lot of them, so I would ask him to just send me Jake, like, can you scan that page?
It really turned out great. That, the third hardback of Powers, and the number one issue, all shipping in November, all shipping on time, and two of those are already at the printer, so...
Very cool.
I think Powers number one...
Monthly, baby!
We're a year late. Don't applaud this. Powers number one may ship 2 weeks early. So.
Oh, wow.
Sweet.
Yeah. Which only makes us 50 weeks late.
Yeah. And the first arc is completely drawn. That's 8 months ahead of schedule.
That's great.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That was one of the reasons why we were off the radar for a while, so it could take time to just get ahead.
Yeah, that, and plus this is the year the TV show went into, became a high priority for us, so that's, you know, big news.
Now, I saw, and if you guys haven't seen it, Brian did a great two-part video interview with Brett Butler on the G4 website, and... kind of went into a little detail about you had just come out of the FX meeting.
Yeah.
Were you there? Were you there as well for those?
No, no.
Okay.
They don't want to talk to you.
All right. Yeah.
I don't. You don't want me near business meetings, dude.
Okay.
Because words like "dude" come out. You know.
Dude, do whatever you want, dude. No, but tell us where is the TV show right now?
Well, after almost 10 years, no joke, because we got optioned for film before our third issue came out, and. And so we were in some sort of development on Powers all those 10 years, but some of the scripts were nightmarishly bad, like really, really bad.
Oh, God.
And like Mystery Men bad, and like we went 2 years without them realizing it was a cop movie, not a superhero movie.
And we got like scripts that were concentrating on Trip Hammer. I'm like, dude, he's not even the main character.
Yeah. There was
and
one
why
draft.
Do we need Dina? Questions like that. I just want to go in there and smack
really?
Some people. Yeah, why do you need Dina?
Two crazy. Drafts without Dina, and then they come to me and go, why doesn't this work? And I go, well, you just made Men in Black without Will Smith from the point of view of the aliens. I don't know how else to say it. This isn't what you bought. And they go, but Spider-Man... really worked out for us as a movie. We like to turn this into Spider-Man. I go, this isn't Spider-Man. And they're like, well, what is it? I'm like, oh, you bought it 4 fucking years ago. I don't know. And then, but I go, it's 7. They go, oh. I'm like, oh. So it took about 2 years to get Dina back in. Thankfully, Frank Oz signed on to direct it. And thankfully, he was a really smart guy, and his lack of knowledge of superheroes was a big help because he wasn't interested in them. He was interested in the genre and the satire, and so he got it back on track in a big way. But still, it had some problems. And then they started hiring some very lofty playwrights like David Hare in the draft.
Wow.
Yeah, and he was a really nice guy, very smart. And the whole conversations about powers got smarter, but the script didn't get any better. And it just went away. And now, literally, millions of dollars have been attached to this project as a film.
None of which is our millions.
So if we wanted powers to become a movie, literally, unless Jesus or Will Smith signed on to become Walker, it wasn't going to happen. So it kind of was dead, and we're like, all right, it's dead. What are you going to do? And then, 3 weeks later, my old agent calls up and goes, you know, though, none of that applies to the TV show. What's the pitch as a TV show? And I'm like, CSI meets Heroes? They go, ooh, that's good. I'm like, yeah, that's what you So, literally, the word got out. We were going to sell it to Fox, and Matt Shernitz, who is a comic book writer of his own merit, he did Namor and Powerless. He was actually, at the time, vice president of FX. Now he's a big up at Fox. He found out we were going to go sell it. He goes, please come to FX. Please come to FX first.
That's great.
And we met with the president of FX. And he bought it in the room.
And then the main deal there, too, was that Brian was to write it. Like, we both got to a point where we felt comfortable saying, you know what, if it kills Powers as a movie or a television show without Brian writing it, fine. We're tired of this. You know,
yeah.
We have lives to live in the meantime. Because
yeah.
All this stuff takes time. It eats up our time. Brian's flying out to L.A. all the time and having meetings with people who don't understand why he's even in the room. You're welcome. And, you know, so it's like at that point we're like, hey, let's get it done, right? Let's not do it at all. Let's go do some other stuff. And, you know, we got better things to do with our lives.
Yeah, I didn't want to go down the Alan Moore road where you're sitting there in your house going, fuckers. And, you know, if I blow it, I blow it. You know, and that's fine. So we, I wrote the first couple drafts of the pilot, which got a director signed on and a showrunner signed on, and the showrunner is much higher on the food chain than I thought we were going to get in the world of television. Kevin Falls, who produced the first 4 years of West Wing, and Michael Dinner, who directed Son of Anarchy's pilot and Bionic Woman pilot, which was a really good pilot.
Pilot's
that you actually
show.
Didn't get to see because they cleaned it up for air. The one that didn't air was really, really good. And so we got a real cool team, and we're not greenlit yet because we have one more pilot to do. But it was a very good meeting at FX. So
very cool.
But I'll be the first to tell you when we fucked that up too. But right now it looks very good.
Do you guys allow yourselves to
dreamlist
cast at all?
No. No.
Nathan Fillion for Walker.
Oh, that's interesting. Nathan Fillion. What about Dina? Because I think Dina is an interesting, and I couldn't really think of actress.
We already saw her playing it on TV in Battlestar Galactica.
Katie Sackhoff. She'd be good.
She's like
Katie Sackhoff, who, by the way, was the bad girl in the Bionic Woman pilot, has a relationship with our director, and I brought that up about 7,000 times, so we'll see.
That'd be cool. Exact same
you know what? We have no control over it at all. You can't do anything about it. So you just go, you know, whatever, you know.
Okay.
So, but it's in a much healthier place than it was even a year ago. So
yeah.
We'll see. And it's in a network it belongs. It's a network you can get adult, you can get gritty. You know, it's the guys that made the Shield, the best of me, so.
So we'll still have Cliss asking what a clitoris is and all that fun stuff.
clitoris isn't a pilot.
That is an FX-approved word, correct?
No one is...
It's an approved phrase.
So there you go. And as I said, unfortunately, the sound quality got bad, so I had to back out before we could get to the Q&A session. But a good time was had by all. And again, my thanks to Mike Oeming and Brian Bendis for suggesting that I moderate the panel. And it was great seeing the guys. And look for more coverage, both with Bendis and Oeming, in the weeks ahead before the end of the year, because those guys have a lot of projects on the burner, and we want to talk about them and give you all the information we can here at Word Balloon. More coverage of the Baltimore Comic Con coming up. Dean Haspiel and the great creators at the Activate Comics website are going to be on talking about the Activate Primer that comes out this week from IDW, and also we'll be talking about their website, a documentary that was made about the Activate creators, and their tour that's coming up, where they will be doing the Activate Salon, where they will be providing readings of a lot of their comics. Good talk with Dean Haspiel and a lot of other creators at Activate. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Sutcher's reminding you to find Word Balloon. It's very simple. You can either go to wordballoon.com, where you'll find our archive of nearly 300 interviews with comic creators and also people from animation, television, and film. You can also find us at newsarama.com and also look for us at iTunes. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, feel free to reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. You can follow me on Facebook or at Twitter, where I go under John Word Balloon. Until next time, thanks a lot for listening. And always, thanks for supporting Word Balloon, a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.